Hillbilly Horror Stories presents Classic Listener Stories.
Hey guys, and welcome to June's Listener Stories Patreon bonus episode. It's hard to believe we've been doing Patreon episodes for a year now.
I know, that is crazy.
So we've got some cool stories lined up for you, as usual. A little mixed bag of stuff. We've got some authors, some friends, some one from over in Great Britain. We've got one from Canada. So a little international flavor today.
Good. Sounds great.
So let's jump right into it. You guys hear us talk all the time, so let's listen to you guys.
All right, let's go.
This first story is, we'll start off with our Canadian friend, Erin.
Okay.
And she had some cool little insights, and we had a little bit of fun back and forth, as I like to do with our Canadian friends. So let's listen to Erin real quick.
All right.
All right. We got just an international type show today. So the last guest that I interviewed was from the United Kingdom. And now we've got a guest from Canada, which oddly enough, Canada is one of our most listened to countries. And I think we've only had one Canadian on here before, which was Karen Wickham, who's the host of STAT. So welcome from Ontario, Canada. Erin, how are you today, Erin?
I'm not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, I can't complain. I'm happy I get to talk to somebody from Canada. Is it Canada? Or is it? No, I guess it's Canada.
Canada.
I get mixed up because the language is Canadian, right? Or is that or is that the bacon? I can't get.
It's both.
Why do you guys call it Canadian bacon when everybody else calls it ham? There's not that big of a difference.
Honestly, we do have ham here in Canada, at least in Ontario. We do have bacon, back bacon, female bacon. We do have lots of different bacons.
You know, I'm just messing with you. I got, because I know there's 1,000 different types of ham. It's like prosciutto and stuff like that. That's all like a form of ham. And so anyway, I'd like to give the Canadians, when I get a chance to talk to them, which is rare, a hard time. So,
and no worries. I hear you.
So Erin, you wrote me a story, and I'm not going to give the story away because it's your story, but it starts back when you were 8 years old and started having some unique dreams, to say the least. So I'm going to turn it over to you and let you tell your story.
All right. Thank you. Yes, I was around 8 years old. My parents were moving. I had, spent the last 8 years same place. So I was really nervous, scared, worried about where I was going to be moving to. And then so I started having these dreams, and they were recurring until we moved, and it had the same guy in it every time, just always there as a friend, a shoulder to lean on, this and that, but I could never see his face in my dreams. But always just a really good friend in my dreams. And fast forward now, I'm 14, never spoke about it to anybody. I was up one night chatting with my mom, and we got on the topic of this. So I was explaining to her the dreams I had been having. Well, then she had turned around and asked me, who was it? And I said, well, I always tried out talking to him in my dreams, and he would never tell me who he was. Just, you don't need to worry. I'm a friend, this and that. So as I was talking to my mom, it just started coming to me. I said, well, I'm getting BJ, his initials are BJ. Mom's like, well, okay. So then I turned around and she asked a couple more questions like, well, what happened to him? I said, well, he was killed. He was around 18. I described his features to her, like to a T. Of one of her friends. She still hadn't mentioned him to me yet. And then I had turned around, so I got the features, and then she had asked, well, how did he die? And I just said, I'm getting his neck. Something had happened to his neck. I wasn't sure if he was decapitated or, just broken neck. So she turned around and she said, okay, he had broke his neck. And then I was talking to her about the same stuff. And she had asked me, where did he die? I said it was a gravel road She goes, yeah. And I said, I couldn't remember now if it was on a hill or a bend, but it was one or the other. And she said, yeah. And then I had mentioned to her about the alcohol being a factor. And she said, no, there was no alcohol involved. I said, not in their vehicle. I said, it was the other vehicle. It was the other driver. I said, it may not have been enough to blow over and be considered, you know, driving under the influence. I said, but there was alcohol. She said, okay, yeah, the other driver had some. And I had gotten the county wrong. Now, mind you, I had said it was Bruce County, but it was actually Huron County. And it was, they were neighboring counties. And then she proceeded to tell me that it was a friend of hers that she had known when she was 12 years old, Bradley James. He was 18. She knew him the summer she was 12. He was out working on the family farm. And again, they were going home from work one night. And that was when the accident had happened. And what else was there? And yeah, she had never told anybody about Bradley James until that night when I had mentioned him to her. So it was pretty freaky.
So how did she respond after it became clear that you knew this story? I mean, was she still skeptical, or was she 100% convinced that there was no doubt this was the same person from her childhood?
Oh, she knew it was the same person from her childhood. My mom, like, onto other stories, I have had, like, similar things happen to me. Like, I would have dreams and, like, of people I hadn't seen for years and years, and they all, like, you know, they would come within, like, a month of me having those dreams. I would see the people and stuff like that. And she's had similar experiences all her life as well. So she was already very open to all that. So yeah, she completely 100% agreed that it's definitely him.
So have you had those same type of experiences with people who have passed away? I know you mentioned like people showing up you haven't seen in a while, but this was definitely somebody that you didn't have a connection to that was showing up to you unabated. So have you had any other situations like that, or even with relatives that you did know that had passed on?
I had one other incident where my grandma had passed. Now, I can't for the life of me remember how she used to say it, but whenever she used to get frustrated, she had one certain saying. And shortly after she had passed, every time I would get flustered, that would just start coming out. And it's like, my God, like, I've never said this before. Like, what's going on? And my mom's like, oh my God, that was what Grandma Ball used to say, like, over and over and over again. And I'm like, oh, well, hi, Grandma. Like,
now, is this something you had heard your grandma say, or is this something that until your mother pointed out, you didn't even know she said it?
I didn't even know she said it until my mom pointed it out.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, my mom is more of the one that she sees the deceased. They come to her in her dreams in times of need or when stuff's about to happen in the family. I was more or less like, I'd see a lot more of like the living or like stuff that's going to happen.
Any thoughts on why BJ came to see you when it's been so many years since he had passed? And you know, it's an odd situation as to why he would just show up. Why he wouldn't show up to your mother instead of showing up to you. It's an odd situation.
Unless he would, my mom now, like, I'm not a big religious person. I like to follow and kind of look at all different faiths and religions. But my mom, she's very big into the guardian angels, and you do, everybody has one. And she figured he was my guardian angel, and he came to me in what he thought was my time of need.
Very cool.
Yeah, so like I said, I've got other stories eventually too, but if you've got time, I can tell you a couple of them too as well.
Sure, we've got time. Tell me a couple more.
All right, well, the one next big one was my mom was a painter. She liked to paint ceramics, so she painted up these fisherman heads that my dad loved. So we hung them up on the wall, and anytime somebody either in the family or very, very close to the family was going to pass, one of them would fall off the wall. Oh. And this happened for about 4 years, 5 years, until my mom finally decided, I'm not putting them back up anymore. So, and the worst time that the one had fallen, and it was surprising because it was over my dad. My mom was gone to broomball with my dad. and I came down the stairs to do something, and the one fisherman head was just completely smashed. Like, it was beyond repair. And before, when they would fall, when somebody would pass, you know, you'd find it on the floor, maybe like just a little chunk out of the back missing. No, this one had fallen and was beyond repair. And it was my dad when he had his heart attack, and his heart had stopped, I think it was 6 times that day when he was out playing broom ball, and he still survived.
Oh, wow.
And then that was when my mom said no more.
So did you take him off the wall at that point?
Oh, yeah. She took him off the wall and she put him away, and they've never come back out. She's trying to tell me she's leaving them to me in her will, and I said, no, I'm good.
that's okay.
Yeah, so like, that's one thing I can do without, Mom.
So give me one more quick one.
Oh, another quick one is, this one has to do with my mom. And actually, my grandpa's been getting sicker, so she's almost got this table. Have you guys ever heard of a talking table?
It seems like I have, but you'll have to refresh my memory.
Talking table is similar to an Ouija board, except it doesn't have all the stuff on the top like an Ouija board. It's just a little table that my grandma even used to use. And it would bounce like one for yes, two for no type thing. And you could ask it yes, no question. And my mom and her brothers were playing it one year when they were little. Well, whoever they were speaking to, they managed to make so mad that my uncle's zipper on his sweater actually physically ripped off and went flying across the room. And she still talks to it to this day, and they play on it to this day.
Wow. So is this something you put your hands on like a Ouija board, or how does it make the connection? Okay.
Yeah, you put your hands on it like you would in a Ouija board, and then, like I said, you'd start. I've never played it personally. My mom only ever has. So I'm just kind of going by what I remember her telling me is, yeah, you put your hands on the table and then it'll bounce. Like, I don't know if it'll start vibrating or whatever for them to let them know that there is somebody there. And then, yeah, once it starts moving around or jumping, then they'll start asking questions. And mom said that out of everything they've asked it, it's never been wrong.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. Aaron, thank you for coming on. I know you had a lot going on today, so we tried to sneak this in a little bit in between both of our work schedules. But it's been fun. I'm glad you came on.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I just want to throw it out there that I love listening to you guys. You guys are amazing. Like, I binge listen to you guys every day because I'm only at, like, episode 43 or 44 right now. So I've been playing catch up. And I binge listen to you guys like 8-10 hours a day when I'm out walking, doing my routes.
Yeah, there's no way I could listen to us 8 hours a day. So we can't. Tracy and I, after about 2 hours together, we have to have a break from each other. So I couldn't imagine.
You know what? I get a hoot out of you two. You guys are awesome. Like, just the stuff you guys come out with. And yeah, I love it.
And believe it or not, nothing we come up with is scripted. It just, whatever comes out. Sometimes it's stupid. Sometimes it's dad jokes. Sometimes it's something that we probably need to edit out because it's not going to go over well. But for the most part, we don't do much editing. I used to kid about that all the time. But, I mean, we record the show and we edit as we go. And a lot of times we never even have to stop the recording unless somebody, you know, ninja starts barking uncontrollably or somebody has to cough or something like that. I mean, most of it is straight through. So we just enjoy what we do, and it comes across that way, I think.
Oh, it does. I know. Like, I've heard some of you guys with that one bad review over Tracy, and you know what? Tell her I love her. She's awesome. She's like, I love her twang.
We got one yesterday, and, matter of fact.
Did you?
Yeah. It's the same thing. It was, I think it said something about her, I want to say it said obnoxious laugh or something of that nature, but yeah, it was another one of those that basically said she needed to go, which we just ignore at this point. So they're few and far.
Oh yeah,
between.
I definitely ignore those ones because you guys are amazing. I love her twang. I love her laugh. I love like just some of the stuff you guys throw in there. And it's like, and I just read the other day, it was like, it was the Southern talk, I guess you would say. And it's like, God bless you or whatever. It's like, it said on Facebook that means, like, you're an idiot, but I still love you type thing.
Yep, that would be bless your heart. Bless your heart.
Telling her that all the time.
Yep, bless your heart is that saying. So
yep, that's it.
Yeah, we definitely.
And I heard that yesterday, and then you guys like said it like right after when I was listening to you, and I just giggled. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I gotta ask you that. Is that what it really means?
Yep, that's exactly what it really means. So yeah, and that goes back years and years and years. If somebody would always say, well, bless their heart, you could just almost guarantee they were an idiot or just extremely stupid. So
oh, you guys are amazing. Thank you again for having me on here.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, you take care.
All right. So what do you think about that with the situation with somebody from her mom's childhood coming to visit her in a dream that she had no connections to whatsoever?
Oh, I think that's pretty amazing, and I just wonder what the reason was. So
that's, you know, like I said, that's what my whole thought process was. Why, you know, and of course, she said that her mom seems to think that maybe he's her guardian angel for whatever reason.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's the greatest thing ever.
So, anyway.
That's pretty cool, though, that she described him, I mean, right down to everything.
The name, how he died.
Yeah, that's really crazy.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's cool, though. I kind of would like for that to happen to me. Somebody come back to, you know, from the past that I never even knew. And it's amazing that she doesn't know him at all.
Right.
Well, good for her.
So, go trying to figure out the paranormal.
Yeah, that was a cool story.
Thank you, Aaron. And please, if you live in Canada, don't get mad at all my little jokes.
Oh.
I love all the people up in Canada.
Of course, yeah. Jerry has to pick fun, usually, so that's just how he rolls.
I'm not real big on hockey, though, so yeah, it is
I'm
what it is.
I'm not big on hockey either, but that's okay.
All right, so let's jump in full force. There is an author who is a fan of the show, and we talk all the time on Twitter by the name of Cyrus. And he wanted to come on and tell a little bit of some stories that he had. So we had a little bit of fun with this one. So take a listen to Cyrus. All right. This is a really cool episode that we're doing because we've got other podcasters and we've got some novelists on. And we're going to have one of those guys on right now. Cyrus Alderwood from Virginia is a writer, and he's got some books out there. Cyrus, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Tell everybody real quick a little bit about your writing and how they can find some of your books.
Okay. Yeah, I write across multiple genres, but I cut my teeth writing in the horror genre. So you can find me on Amazon.com, Cyrus Alderwood. I've got a few titles out. Two of the horror novels that I have out, the most recent just came out in January. It's called Dark Places. It's a collection of short stories. I also have another called Bedtime Stories for the Terminally Afraid. One of the things I kind of like to do, because horror sometimes can get so cliche when you're reading it, I always try to put some crazy, weird twist ending just so you don't really see it coming. So that's kind of one of the little things I like to do. But those are two in the horror genre, and I recently had another one come out called Tales from the Sunset Pub. And I've written a couple of comedy books as well. One is kind of it's called Pot of Gold, and another one, for any pro wrestling fans that are out there, I've got another one called A Man Called Douche. It's also a comedy kind of set in that pro wrestling genre. Just slapstick, kind of like Dumb and Dumber meets American Pie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now you're talking my type of book. So you've got a story that involves a hotel stay in Lynchburg, Virginia. And
right.
You sent it to me. It's a fascinating story. I said, hey, Cyrus, why don't you come on and tell this one, because you're going to be able to do it more justice than I can. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to you and just tell everybody about your experience.
Yeah. This took place back in the winter of 2007. And at the time, I was working with some business partners to work on a financial business and an investment business. So I went to Lynchburg, and we had a hotel in the old part of town. And it was one of the older buildings. It was a chain hotel, but it was a Holiday Inn Express. And what they did is, I guess they had spent a lot of money refurbishing this old building, so it'd be kind of a historic feel to it. So I had a room there on the second floor, and I got a kind of a bit of a late check-in, and I had to be up and ready and dressed for the meeting by 7 a.m. the next morning. So didn't really have a lot of time there. So I had this just try this big folder I was going through with all this information, and I was kind of staying up late to go through this. And the hotel room was, when I walked in, I didn't really get any kind of a vibe or feeling. I've never been one of those people that kind of get a weird feeling something's off or amiss. Just a generic room. I go in, there's a table over in the corner, a round table with a couple of chairs, a desk, a TV, nightstand. It's, you know, relatively nice room. At first, I'm sitting on the bed, and I'm going through this folder, and I have the TV on, and I'm not really paying attention to it, but then when it clicks off, you're like, oh, what'd I do? I'm looking to see if I maybe leaned over on the remote control or something, but no, I didn't. The remote control was sitting on the nightstand, and the TV had turned itself off. And I thought, well, that's weird. Okay, maybe there's a timer set or something. So, I turned the TV back on, kept thumbing through, and it wasn't maybe 3 or 4 minutes later, the TV turns itself off again. And I thought, well, that's nuts. Okay. So I get up, and I turn the TV on, but I make sure it's plugged in really well. Everything's kind of screwed in back of the TV. So all the wiring is good. I just want to make sure it's not short in anything while it's going on and off. So anyway, I go back and I turn it off, and I leave the remote on the nightstand. And I go over to the table and I start reading, going through this stuff. It's kind of quiet. And problem with the room, though, ever since I got in there, it was scorching hot. Enough that I'm sweating, and I'm wearing, in the middle of winter, a pair of shorts and a T-shirt at this point. In this room with the window open, the heat set on 70, and it was scorching hot that I was sweating. And it was so late, I didn't really want to call the hotel to have them send maintenance up because I knew I had to get up early. But no matter what I did with the heat, even turning it off, it seemed like the room just kept getting hotter and hotter. And I don't know, I just, at that time, I was trying to just kind of put this stuff in the back of my mind. It's not anything too terribly odd. Until I'm sitting there in the dark, in the quiet, next to the lamp and at this table, and the TV turns itself on this time. And at that point, I'm like, okay, something, that's weird. Okay, so I get up, and I get the remote control, and I bring the remote control over to the table. And the TV cut itself on and off maybe 6-7 times during the course of that evening before I finally just turned the TV off with the remote control. Made sure all the lights were off, set the remote on the nightstand by the bed, and started to go to sleep. But I had this weird feeling, like, you ever have that feeling you're being watched?
Yeah.
And, you just kind of, you don't know, but everything was kind of weird, and the TV was kind of weird. I'm trying to be a skeptic about it. There has to be a rational explanation for why a TV would turn itself off and on when you're not anywhere near the remote. And I kept having this strange feeling someone was sat in the corner watching me. So I would open my eyes and squint and look across the room in the dark. And sure enough, I didn't see anything, but it just felt funny. But eventually, even with the scorching heat, I was laying on top of the covers in January. And it was a brutal kind of cold outside, too. It was below zero. And I have a window open. And I'm burning up. So I'm laying there. And I eventually go to sleep. And when I wake up the next morning, I had my cell phone at the time set to be an alarm, but when I woke up, my cell phone hadn't rang yet. The alarm hadn't gone off yet. But what had woke me up was I could hear that fan on in the bathroom. You know, when you turn the lights on, you have the overhead fan.
Mm-hmm.
The bathroom light was on. The TV was on, and the remote control was back on the table by the window. At that point, I just got a shower, checked out, and I was gone. Because I was trying to find any kind of rational explanation for why these things happened, why it was so hot, why the remote control moved in the middle of the night, why the bathroom light was on, this heat, everything. It was just had a bad vibe, And I'm not one to get these kind of feelings, but I was like, I'm just getting out of here. So not really having a lot of sleep that night, I showered and left. And I told that story to a lady probably about 4 years after that. She actually was a paranormal investigator, and her name was Emily. And I remember her telling me, and so she said, I'd really have to be there to investigate, to really know what was going on, because she couldn't step in my shoes. But she just looked at me and she said, But, you know, it sounds like there was something in that room that was desperately trying to get your attention. And at that point, I was like, oh, please don't tell me that. But that was a weird experience I'd had in an old hotel that had been refurbished. And it made me – and the next morning, I did mention – asked the guys at the meeting. There was one on either side of my room. And I asked both of them. I said, guys, in your rooms, did you have any problems with the heat or anything? Like, no problems at all. Just a restful night for them, you know, but my room was a little active, I guess, to say the least.
Did you check with any of the hotel staff or anything to see if they had had any other complaints similar to yours?
I wanted to ask, but to be honest, I was kind of afraid to ask. I kind of didn't want to know because I just didn't want that to be real. I just wanted to get out of there and think, hey, there's a rational explanation. I'm just not smart enough to figure it out.
Have you done any research since then on that hotel to see if anything comes up like on Google as far as any paranormal activity?
No, I didn't find anything as far as paranormal activity or any kind of complaints about it. But one thing I did find out that it was actually one of the oldest buildings in Lynchburg and had been around for a long time. And so the building itself, I assumed at that point, probably had some history. And I've seen enough paranormal shows now on television to know that if you go into a place that has a lot of history and you start changing things up and renovating, sometimes you stir things up, whether you mean to or not.
Absolutely.
And maybe that was the case.
Hotels are always listed near the top as the most haunted places, too. It's usually like hospitals, prisons, and hotels because of how many people come through there on a regular basis.
Yeah, everybody's got a story, and they go to bed with that story every night. And I didn't think about that at the time. That's a great point. Certainly, even to this day, I can still remember just like when sitting there and the TV actually turns itself on and not off, that I was like, whoa, you know, that sinking feeling I had while I was sitting in that chair in the corner trying to read those notes. And to this day, it's just kind of, yeah, it gives you a little bit of a chill when you think about it.
Well, from somebody who works with televisions and remotes every single day, I'll let you in on a little secret that won't explain your situation, but it would have the first part of it anyway. If you have a TV and the remote control has the battery starting to go bad, sometimes it will turn the TV on and off even if it's just sitting on the nightstand. But your remote ended up moving throughout the night to different tables and stuff like that. That's not going to explain that. But
yeah, I was a little worried when I got up the next morning. And I was going to reach over and turn the TV on, and the remote is back over on the table on the other side of the room, and the TV's on when I turned it off and I went to bed. So, yeah. But that's good to know. I didn't know that they could do that with the batteries are going dead.
Yeah, when they start going dead, it kind of malfunctions every once in a while, so you'll have that. So if you're listening at home and your TV just starts going off and on, it's not always a poltergeist. Sometimes it's just you need to change the batteries. But if it's moving around the room, I can't really help you with that.
So yeah, that was odd. That and the bathroom light the next morning, because I knew I didn't get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom. And yet the light and the fan were on. And that was a little weird. But again, I would love to think there's a rational explanation for that, but...
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find that one.
Figure that one out.
Well, Cyrus, brother, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And like I said, if you come up with some other one somewhere along the way, and if not, people can just go read some of your books and then get some more horror out of you anyway.
Oh, yeah, I've got quite a collection of short stories in those books. And again, they can also find me on CyrusAlderwood.com. I actually sometimes I post some free stuff up to read, but yeah, I appreciate it. You know, as an independent writer, we need all the support we get. So
absolutely, thanks. I agree. And Ninja's obviously a big fan. He wanted to
make sure.
Yeah, he's got the timing of. We won't get into it. Anyways, thanks, Cyrus, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Hey, take care.
So see, that's very similar to the stories we've had in the past and with us with electronics, yes, turning off and on. And, and you know, it's like I was telling, you know, him that sometimes a remote, when the battery gets weak, will kind of do that. But,
oh, really? Because, you know, we've had that happen, like you said.
Right.
Several times. And I'll turn the TV off and go to leave the room and the stupid thing will pop back on. I'm like, what the heck?
But the part about his story, like I said, that was unexplainable was the fact that when he gets up and the remote controls, yeah, in a completely different spot in the room.
Yeah, that's a little creepy. Yikes.
But But yeah, Cyrus has got some books out and stuff. So
like, very cool.
You know, like I said, he gave how you could find him in there, and he's a pretty cool guy. We talk all the time on Twitter.
Well,
so
good. I'm glad he finally came on.
So let's keep this thing going with a little British flavor. We've got Emma, who is a school teacher in Great Britain, obviously. And she had some really cool stories, and I'm not going to ruin it by divulging it a little bit early. We'll let her go ahead and tell the story. We are joined by Emma from over in Nottingham. That's over in the United Kingdom. And we've only had one other United Kingdom guest on. That was Jilly Gilder. She's actually been on a couple of times. And Emma wrote this story a while back, but we're just now finally able to connect with the time restraints and everything. There's about a five-hour delay in time from United Kingdom to here, so sometimes it makes it tough scheduling these things. So, Emma, thank you for making the time to come on.
I know. It's great for you to have me. Thank you.
Well, I really appreciate the fact that people want to share these stories because I think it helps everybody involved. And your story starts when you were about 11 years old and goes up to your early 30s. So you've actually got a decent amount of stuff to talk about today. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to you and just let you have at it. And then I'll ask you some questions at the end.
Okay, thanks. It all started, I say, when I was about 11 years old. So just kind of gone into secondary school. The only people in my family that ever really experienced it was the women. So myself, my mother and my sister have all experienced noises, objects moving, sounds, feelings. there are kind of a few occasions that really stand out. So myself and my mother were in our living room, and my little sister, she was only 8 at the time. I thought she'd come through the door and ran and hid behind where my mother was sitting. And so my mum thought the same. She looked at me. So I snuck around the corner of the sofa to surprise her. And there was nobody there. And that kind of thing was really, really commonplace, that you would be alone and you would just kind of be doing whatever you were doing. And there'd be a sigh, or the sofa next to you would kind of rustle as if there was somebody sitting down, or you would kind of catch somebody moving out of the corner of your eye, but there would be nobody there. And it was never scary. It was never threatening. It was always just kind of something that was. And I think because the three of us knew that it was happening and experiencing it, it didn't make it scary. My dad, he never experienced it at all until I'd moved out of the house. I was about 17, and my mum and my sister were obviously still in the house, and he was saying how ridiculous it was that, you know, that we thought this and we were supposed to be intelligent people, and they were sat in our living room and the living room door slammed shut, just no reason at all, never ever done it before, never done it since, and he went quiet very quickly and never mentioned it again. But the one thing that has happened to me, and I can't work it out. I've come up with many different explanations, but none of them actually explain everything that happened that day. So I've moved out. I'd had my first child. I was 25 years old. And she was about 2 months old. She was upstairs asleep. I was in the living room. Heard her crying. I went upstairs. And I went upstairs. At the turn of the stairs at the top, there was a dark figure stood in front of my bedroom door. And of course, baby's crying, I'm really tired, just kind of ignored it, just went past it, went and got Dora, took her downstairs, put her on a changing unit, turned to get a nappy, and it was the first time she'd ever rolled over, and she rolled off her changing unit, and at the time we'd got a flagstone floor, and she fell onto the flagstone floor. But she fell in such a way, I would swear that somebody had placed her on the floor. She didn't cry. She didn't scream. She wasn't red where she hit the floor. She didn't bang her head. She was absolutely fine. And she landed on her back exactly as if somebody had placed her down on the floor. And so I kind of just looked and just said, thank you, because I was terrified in that moment of something happening to my baby, and also kind of realized that actually somebody was there to catch her. and had put her down. And a couple of times after that, I kind of saw the same misty figure, but it was never threatening. It was never there in a bad way. And after that kind of that time, my mum and my sister have never experienced anything in their own houses, but I have. And at night, I'll still kind of see a shape or a figure or that kind of something out of the corner of your eye. And I've been through the whole sleep deprived parent, you know, not getting enough sleep. Okay, so you can say that I might have seen a figure because I was really tired. You could say that I imagine things. You could say that, you know, if there's a crisis, things happen in slow motion. But what I can't get my head around and I can't explain is how she managed not to be injured and to kind of to have not even cried. And so I can only think that on that day, whatever it was that's been around me since I've been so young actually caught her and put her down.
So let me ask you a question on that aspect. Do you feel like the baby fell and something kept it from falling at the speed it normally would to hit the floor? Or do you feel like this entity picked the baby up and just placed it there?
I think she fell, because from that moment on, she could turn over. And about 8 weeks is about when they start to kind of turn over. But she'd never done it before, and it just took me by surprise. But I think that she'd start to fall, and then something placed her down on the floor.
So you said you're so far, and I know you've got more to tell, and I wasn't going to interrupt you, but now you've piqued my interest. But you said that your mom and sister hadn't seen anything; it was just you. But your dad had that one time after you moved out. If it wasn't for that, I would almost swear this thing is more of an attachment to you than the family. But, you know, if your dad seen it at your old house, at your mom's house, one time when you weren't there, that might still mean maybe it just followed you and it goes back and forth.
It's one of those things. It's kind of like the more I try and unpick it, the more it doesn't make any sense at all. So I do feel like it's with me, but there's been kind of large periods where there's kind of been nothing. And I've never kind of been able to make it happen, you know, kind of when you're sat on your own and you're kind of thinking, well, if there's something there, then, you know, you should come and say hi. And obviously, if you've not hurt me in the 25 years preceding now, you're not going to start now. But there's never been anything. And I've never kind of, if I've sat and thought about it, it's never made anything happen. It's always kind of when you're least expecting it. And my sister's had a child, and she's had nothing. And so my mum, she now lives mostly on her own, and she's never had anything since either. So it almost seems to be there when you need it, which is bizarre.
Well, that's a good thing, though. If it's if you only got nothing but positives, that's definitely a positive.
Yeah. So for everything that ever happened, and kind of sometimes when you tell other people, you know, because you used to kind of hear this, and, you know, people would think that was terrifying. And right. It never felt that way.
So after the baby incident, what kind of other things have you had happen since then?
It was just before I had my second child when I was pregnant. The figure again was stood at the end of the stairs when I was coming down. And me being me kind of went, what is it? And then there was nothing. And so I'm not entirely sure what that was about. I always think there's a reason for it, but we definitely stood at the bottom of the stairs when I was coming downstairs, and not entirely sure what that was about. And a few years later, when I was waiting for my husband to come home from work, both the kids were in bed. I was kind of just sat down, just watching TV, waiting. And again, the living room door kind of opened a little, and then next to me on the sofa, we had a leather sofa, and it kind of crinkled exactly as if somebody was just sat there on the sofa next to me. But again, there was nothing that really you could connect to either of two of those events. There was nothing bad happened, or nothing, you know, it wasn't a warning for anything. So I'm not sure whether they're just kind of checking in, or I don't know. I say I can't explain it. There are bits of it you kind of go, I don't get it. I don't understand.
Do you feel like this could be a relative that's just decided to try to hang out and help you out?
I was always very close to my maternal grandma and granddad. And I don't know whether it is that spirit is different to the physical, but the shape that I saw was quite tall. I'm quite tall for a woman. I'm 5'11", and it was easier taller than me. But neither of my grandparents were that tall. So I don't know whether the spirit is bigger than the kind of the actual physical body. But again, it doesn't feel familiar. It doesn't feel like my grandma or granddad. And at the time that the event started happening, that was before my grandma and granddad had died. So I don't know whether it was something from the house that we moved into or whether it was just something other than actual person.
Well, I don't know. I guess I'd rather have those kind of experiences than some of the other experiences we've heard about. So it definitely sounds a little more entertaining and fun than some of the scarier ones.
Yeah, it's always kind of been a weirdly comforting thing. And, you know, my mum was at home when we were at school and my dad was at work. She used to talk to it, you know, it's never felt threatening. And, you know, the people either fall into two camps. They either flat out don't believe me. So my ex-husband and my sister's husband, they're having none of, they don't believe it in even slightly. They kind of, you know, they've got their own explanation for why it happened. That, you know, it was just pure chance and it was just this. And you kind of go, well, okay, so it was what, 25 years of pure chance? Or,
you know, it's funny though, but you're right. I mean, it's, you know, we talk all the time on the show that you're never going to be able to prove anything to someone who just doesn't believe. They'll always find an answer, even if there's really not an answer. They'll say, well, there's got to be a logical answer, even though they don't have it, you know, so, but well, it's true.
I know how you were kind of saying maybe it's attached to me. So my boyfriend that I'm living with at the moment, a couple of weeks ago, he said, I've had the strangest experience. He said, just as I was kind of waking up, he swore that his dad, who's been dead about 20 years, was kind of sat next to him saying, it'll be all right. And he'd never experienced anything like that at all until kind of we started living together.
Hmm. Well, it's always fun when you can bring along your extra friends for your new boyfriends to play with.
Yeah, clearly that's it. I've got an entourage from the afterworld.
You know, it's funny you talking about the baby situation. My great-grandmother, when she passed away, the only person that was there, she had her husband had just passed away a couple of months before that, and they had been married for like literally 70 years. And so she had taken it a little hard, obviously, as you would expect. And the my grandma's ex-husband at the time now, but he was living there. And he had walked into the kitchen, and he said he saw my great-grandmother. She was still alive, obviously. But he saw her. He said it's almost like she fell backwards, but it's almost like somebody had their hands and just lowered her to the floor, similar to what you said with the baby. And so she actually had a massive heart attack and died right there. But he said he walked in as she fell, and it was not a normal fall. It was not a collapse. It was just as if someone laid her on her back and laid her down. So, you know, I've heard of situations like that before, even with my own family.
With Dora, she was a baby when she was born. She was only 5 pounds, 14 ounces. And the heaviest part of it is the head. So what should have done, I mean, the counter was waist height. So it'd be, what, about 3.5 feet? Mm-hmm. So if you fall, you know, 3.5 feet head first onto a flagstone floor, she should have hurt herself. She didn't even startle. She didn't even, you know, she didn't even cry. She wasn't fazed by any of it at all. And you kind of go, that's not normal. That's, you know, she should have at least had a mark of some kind where she'd hit the floor. But she didn't. And I can't explain that.
Hmm. Well, Emma, I appreciate you coming on and telling these stories. I'm a firm believer that, you know, we're all... The people who listen to this show, for the most part, are believers. So when you tell a story like this, you don't ever have to worry about a lot of skepticism. It's people who are in your corner, and they believe what you're telling them. And I think it helps others who want to come out and tell their story come out of that show, because sometimes they feel like they're going to be met with some kind of ridicule, and it just keeps them from saying something that they believe they saw. And I think stories like this help them to be able to come out and say it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, dear. And I'm sure we'll talk to you in the future.
That's great. Thanks very much.
So a couple of things, because that's a really cool story. But I learned, for those of you listening at home, and you probably figured it out, but she was talking about putting the baby on the changing unit, and she reached to get a lappy. And as I found out from my New Zealand friends, that's what they call diapers over in Great Britain and Australia and New Zealand. So a lappy is a diaper.
Very cool. I think I like that name better.
So,
like, and then the diaper. I mean, there's like nothing to it.
And then the other thing I got out of it is, how do you see a dark, misty figure at the top of your stairs and you just decide, oh, well, I'm tired, I'll just go past it? I've been really tired before, but I've never been that tired where scared part didn't kick in or something.
Yeah, definitely. That's pretty crazy. And man, thank goodness, I mean, the baby didn't get hurt or anything like that. So that's a great thing. And I don't know, that's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it's you know, somebody was looking out, it sounds like. Yeah. So, and I guess if you're going to have a mysterious, that's why you can't judge a book by its cover. You got this mysterious dark mist that you would automatically assume is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's, you know, helping babies. And
yeah.
So this last one is a young lady named Susan, and her husband Robert and I have done comedy for 12, 13 years together.
Oh, yeah,
together.
A long time.
I've known him longer than I've known Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's went through a lot of medical problems recently, and things are starting to look up. But he's lost his, you know, most of his sight and a lot of other problems due to diabetes and stuff like that. And so I've been talking to him a lot recently, a lot more than had been, and started talking to his wife, Susan, a little bit. And she told me she was getting ready to go to school for something that I thought was really cool, and one thing led to another. And I'm like, I think you need to probably come on and tell your story. And 15 minutes later, we were recording this. So
that worked out good.
This is definitely all over the place. This is a 10-minute interview that has several different facets of it, and I hope you guys enjoy. Okay, guys, we actually have a friend of mine. Her and her husband have been longtime friends of mine from the comedy world. She doesn't do comedy, but she puts up with her husband, and that's, trust me, that's comedy enough. But this is Susan from Lexington. And Susan, you're getting ready to get a degree in a subject that I think will be near and dear to a lot of the listeners' hearts. Tell me a little bit about the degree you're getting ready to get.
I am getting my master's, and then I will be getting my doctorate in spiritual warfare from Regent University.
And what exactly does that entail? What exactly is spiritual warfare?
Spiritual warfare goes around us always. There's always spiritual warfare between good and evil. Good spirits or angels and bad spirits or demons. It is constantly going on around us. Some of us have more angels around us than demons, some more demons than angels. Depends, you know, on how much you believe into that. It kind of depends on really what congregation you go to. Something that I have, that's been near and dear to my heart because I was forced into demonic rituals as a child.
Now, we're not going to gloss right over the fact that you just said that you were forced into demonic rituals as a child. So let's start there and tell me what happened in that situation.
My father's stepfather and his son, who had been my father's half-brother, and some people that worked for my step-grandfather, who was a painter, would force me in when I was very little into demonic rituals. And I will just say this, when you call the devil, he comes.
How did you get involved in, when they forced you into the rituals, how did you get involved to begin with? Why? What was the purpose of them using you for that?
They wanted my soul, is what they always told me, that I had a pure soul of a child, and they wanted my soul.
So what kind of things would they have you do during these rituals?
They would have me eat live animals. I was set in the middle of a pentagram, mm-hmm. that had candles placed at different places, and they would move them as they did the rituals. And there were mirrors involved. I was very young. It was like from when I was 3 till when I was 5. So it was very young, but it's something I've never forgotten.
Now, when you say live animals, what kind are we talking, like insects, or are we talking like chickens?
Rats, cats, that kind of stuff.
So how do you eat a live animal? Was it something where it was live and they sacrificed it at that point and then you ate it, or you
sometimes,
just took a bite
sometimes
out of kitty?
Not. It just depended. It just depended. You try not to get scratched. It's what you try not to do, or get bitten. Usually they were, there was a ceremony, and at the time I didn't realize the language. Later on, my mother was a Latin teacher and taught me Latin and when I was 6, and then I kind of knew more of what was going on.
So you said that a lot of the things that's happened to you in your life since then, some things that you... premonitions and things like that to attribute right. to these ceremonies.
Right. Yes. The only thing that happened to me at the time that would be weird at the same time that these were going on, most things happened afterward, where there were 2 ghost coyotes that lived under my bed. And our area was an area known to have coyotes in it. So... I thought they were wolves because I was little and didn't really know the difference. But yes, they would holler and howl at night and keep me awake.
All right. Now, you was telling me a story before about, as a child, a young child, there's a Civil War cemetery behind your house that you used to play in. Tell me about that situation.
Played in it, like I said. I know that's disrespectful now, but at the time, you know, we were children, and it was huge. It was beautiful, and it has some of the oldest stones. And you have to understand that even though the lines of the cemetery ended, the burials did not. The burials went all the way down the street and around the corner to where my grandmother lived. So, I mean, things happened. Like one night, a dead Southern soldier walked into my bedroom at my grandmother's with an axe in his head. And then he would go in the closet, and it just kept happening over and over and over until he asked me a question. And he was asking me where his commander was, and I said, "You're dead. And do you know that?" He said, "I have to find my commander," and then he went into the closet, and then I never saw him again.
And you said that you used to play with children.
I used to play with ghost children in the cemetery, yes. And that's a very common thing. I've heard a lot of people say that about that cemetery.
Now, as a child, you also had some other things. You were telling me about some premonitions that you had.
Oh, and one thing I wanted to say about the playing with the children... There was a special children's cemetery in that cemetery, so that is probably why that was so predominant in our community. What did you just say? I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Premonitions, yes. My dad had his side of the family was huge, and I predicted, I would dream about it, wake up screaming about it, and say so-and-so died, and then the next morning we would get a call, and that relative would be dead.
You were just a barrel of fun to be around, it sounds like.
I just was.
And you said that happened like 7 or 8 times?
It happened 8 times. And then recently it happened with my godmother 2 weeks ago. She passed, and that happened with her.
And you had a story about your godmother other than just her passing you were telling me earlier.
Yes. I have been in spiritual warfare with demons my whole life, and... a lot of people are not going to believe this. If they want to see it, that's fine with me, as long as it's all right with my husband. But I had a big fight with a major demon. I now bear the stigmata of the Spear of Destiny in my side. And after that happened, I turned around, and there was my godmother, like she was thanking me. And then she ascended to heaven.
You got to love a happy ending.
I like to think I helped.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about is you grew up, most of the stuff happened in Cynthiana, correct?
Correct.
Which, for those of you out there listening, Cynthiana is where the creators of The Walking Dead are actually from. They have a huge mural out that way, a big festival every year.
My mom was his mentor.
Yeah, yes, there you go.
At the library, yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, and the main character, one of the main characters actually says he's from Cynthiana on the show. So that's, what is that, about 45 minutes from Lexington?
About an hour. Yeah, Depends on how fast you drive.
Not too far from here. So, but you worked at an opera house there that had a couple of famous ghosts.
Oh, yes. Well, there were the ghost children. I saw them daily and did not even realize they were children, that they were ghosts, because the owner's children were playing with them. I thought they were little children until I realized otherwise one day. But there was one ghost. There are a lot of ghosts there, especially from the 1920s, when it was, you know, roaring like the 1920s. And she was an opera singer who wore a very long scarf. Everyone has known about her. She's very famous. As far as I know, I am the only person she has trusted to come out to. And the real Burke one day, my boss wasn't there. It was in the middle of the movie, obviously. I had to run upstairs to the real room and try to fix it. And there she was.
Anything happened as far as like a back and forth with you two, or is just a...
No, she smiled at me. A very knowing smile. And it was weird because there was no wind whatsoever in that room, but her scarf, it was extremely long, was blowing like it was blowing in the wind.
And there was inside where there was no wind, correct?
None whatsoever.
That's pretty cool. It's kind of like that Marilyn Monroe effect.
Yes.
Susan, this has been fun. You know, I gotta admit, you know, we've talked a bunch of times and I just never really knew that you had had so many different experiences and stuff until today. And as soon as I heard, it was like, I got to get you on the show. So
perfect, perfect timing.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jerry.
All right, babe. Well, I'll talk to you soon. Tell Robert I said hi.
I will. You tell Tracy hi. I'll talk to you later.
Yes, ma'am. Well, how about that for a way to end the show?
Well, that was a bunch of scary stuff, I guess I would say. That was a lot.
There's not a whole lot of stories we do in 10 minutes where we end up having demonic rituals, Civil War cemeteries, and then obviously we ended up with predicting 8 deaths.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's getting a degree in spiritual warfare. So yeah, there's a lot to take in.
That is a lot. I don't know how she deals with all that.
So guys, thank you so much for being patrons. We greatly appreciate all of your time and your support and your awesome reviews and everything that you do for us. You make us feel special every single day of our life, and we just want to say thank you, and we will see you again in 15 days.
All right, guys. We love you.